Well, no one in Portland can be unaware of the increase in people sleeping on the streets here. Nobody's happy about it, and there is a plan to improve the situation that will go soon before the city council. But what voice do the people have on the people on the streets have in putting it together and making it work? The Old Mole's Denise Morris is here with two guests who are proposing better and more democratic ideas. Denise.
Thank you, Clayton. I am here with Benjamin Donlin and Sandra Curtis Comstock, both with long histories of activism around this issue. I want to introduce them both thoroughly before we get started. Benjamin Donlin works in the cafe at Sisters of the Road, is a member of Right to Survive and the Western Regional Advocacy Project. He's worked on issues around houseless advocacy for about 7 years, worked on everything from tiny house villages in Colorado to the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign and organizing power in the streets. Sandra Curtis Comstock is the coordinator of Right to Survive's ambassador program that brings housed and unhoused Portlanders together to find solutions to shared problems at the neighborhood level. She is co-founder of Neighbor to Neighbor, a policy and data collective dedicated to tracking the effects of city policies on low-income and houseless Portlanders. She does hold a PhD in development sociology from Cornell. She has taught, researched, and lectured at Cornell, Harvard, and the University of Western Ontario. Well-traveled, Sandra. She has held Fulbright and Social Science Research Council fellowships to study the legal, policy, labor, and cultural issues emerging in the transition from national to cross-national systems of manufacturing and governance in the U.S., Mexico, and Bangladesh. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I wanted to have you each just say something briefly about what has drawn you to these issues. You both have obviously dedicated an enormous amount of your life, career, activism to work around issues of houselessness. And I wanted to just have folks get to know a little bit of what brought you to that work.
Sure. Well, very briefly, I was houseless for a long time, traveling around the country. For me, personally, it was kind of a choice. Because I had a lot of privilege and I wanted to take advantage of that physically. I didn't have kids or no disabilities, so I wanted to see America. But I didn't have the money to have a house and travel, so I chose one and I chose traveling. During that time, I very quickly realized that there are private security forces that their entire job is to police the houseless community in just about every downtown across the country. And I found that very weird. So when I started looking into it, I learned about entities like business improvement districts, which were created specifically to police the houseless community. Through looking through that history, I discovered that there's a lot that's not very obvious about why homelessness is the way it is today, and brought me into research into advocating on a street-wide basis to making improvements to our lives.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I spent some time between high school and college living on the streets, also more or less by choice. And I think that opened my eyes to the ways in which people are treated very differently when they don't have a home. And housing status is something that, a form of discrimination that people are very comfortable perpetuating. Just a small example, a man I was traveling with was twirling a frisbee on his finger and he got a ticket for release of a projectile object, like as if he were throwing a rock. That ticket he didn't pay, and so a few months later he ended up jailed for it in the brand new facility that they just built that they needed to fill the beds for in order to get compensation from the federal government. So those sorts of things alerted me and awakened me to some of the issues facing people that are unhoused. And then I left academia and started a business downtown near Powell's. And when Mayor Hales decided to do the massive sweeps on the southeast side, and in the area that I was in, it's right across from Central City Concern, we have our houseless population and a positive working relationship with them and knowledge. But with those massive sweeps, people were evicted and ended up on the other side of the river very traumatized. And that energy and the effects of that weren't just bad for them personally, but it created a lot of difficulty in the area and affected a lot of things related to my business. And so I think also I see it from multiple perspectives of how the kinds of policies that we are using are damaging to the whole community, not just to what the people that are unhoused.
All right, thank you. So we want to get right into a discussion about the upcoming proposal by the Central East Industrial Council. There's going to be a vote. We'll talk about that. That's now rescheduled for January 30, but I understand it's been rescheduled many times, and this will we'll talk a little bit about what that entails towards the end of the program. But let's give folks some insight into the history of the CEIC, and we'll kind of move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the Central East Side Industrial Council is a council that oversees the industrial district. The district is roughly, 77 blocks over on the southeast side between Burnside and Powell or something like that, and from 1st till 12th. So it's been around roughly about 30 years, and it's mainly there to oversee the fact that there is a industrial sanctuary of the area, so it's federally recognized as an industrial sanctuary. It's comprised of a board, and it's one of these private public entities, so it's neither it's publicly funded, privately controlled, something like that. It's made up of a board of property owners and business owners in the area, and as well as developers. And they proposed this thing called the East Works Enhanced Service District. And enhanced service districts used to be known as business improvement districts. And very quickly, this is a pilot program that is funded by property tax assessments, which are taxes taken on from yearly property assessments, which are public funds, right? Given to this pilot program that is a security program that is $2.6 million of money, and its main and only job, as far as I can tell, is to police those who are poor in the houseless community.
Did you want to add something there, Sandra?
They've had a pilot program for the last year, which has been funded through parking fees. And then what they're going to the city to ask for is to add an additional property license fee that will be assessed on all the property owners in the area, and that the city will take in and then turn back to them on top of the parking fees. So $1.2 million comes from the new property assessment thing, and then the other $1.4 comes from meter fees, and then the idea is that money is then given to a 12-member board that's appointed by the property owners the property owners, and then they oversee how that money is spent, and I guess about half of it is cleaning cleanup and security, and then a certain amount is for administrative and promotional purposes and lobbying purposes, and another smaller amount is for
graffiti abatement.
Well, no, actually the graffiti abatement I think is in the sidewalk
program.
But it's a jobs program, but it's basically training people to do the cleanups, essentially.
Right, so there's obviously a lot to unpack in that. Did you have something you wanted to add there?
Well, there's just like a lot of things that we've been working on, and I don't want to get too caught up in the details of that. I want to sort of focus on the positive and the possible, if that's possible.
Right, yeah, I wanted to bring you right to that, mm-hmm. to talk about what the response is, which should perhaps clarify mm-hmm. some of the issues that are seen within the CEIC's program
right.
versus the compassionate
change.
Thank you. There's a lot of
district.
Acronyms in
yes.
all of this.
Yeah. We'll try not to use them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah. So let's get into that because okay. that's the vision and that's the place we feel we need to go.
Well, so like our vision in general and our coalition's vision is that all of our neighbors, regardless of housing status, deserve safe and stable places to sleep, wash, and organize their lives. And that these are the basic building blocks of civic health and well-being, not just for the unhoused community, but for us all, which I think will become more clear as I go on. Back in the early fall, we met with the Central East Side Industrial Council to express our concerns about the plan that they had proposed. And they sounded interested in hearing what kind of alternative we might offer. So one of our concerns, our first area of concern, was the additional private policing cleanups, which we believe would be both expensive and ineffective in actually meeting their goals of cleaner and calmer Central East Side. And we also know from experience across the river from programs like the Clean and Safe one that governs downtown that it's been pretty harmful for those living outdoors. Our second area of concern was a lack of full involvement from a broad community of stakeholders. They had consulted some few stakeholders, but we felt that really they hadn't done, they really need to hear from more people.
Especially the houseless community,
right,
which they
absolutely.
Did not consult at all.
Mm-hmm. At that first meeting, members of the Central East Side Industrial Council expressed openness to a more participatory and compassionate plan, and so in good faith, we began engaging expert partners and the community to develop such a plan. So we put in a lot of very long hours of conversation and consultation. We spoke to over 20 expert partners on different aspects of our plan. We canvassed over 300 businesses and residents in the district, and we put together a template or preliminary plan meant to be further detailed through ongoing community engagement and input. So at this point, we're looking forward to speaking with the CIC on Tuesday, and we are optimistic that all of this initial hard work will pay off with an agreement to collaborate moving forward. And, you know, for us, our sole purpose and existence right now as a coalition is to contribute to an innovative and constructive response to our collective crisis and to do something better together than we have up till now. Too long, I think we've worked at odds, and I think it's time for city businesses and neighbors, housed and unhoused, to work together. And I think that's the reason that we have such punitive policies and non-constructive policies is we haven't built the community input and investment and understanding to build something harder, but far more, less costly and more effective.
Right. Excuse me. So then is there more that you can say about some of the nuts and bolts of the Compassionate Change District?
Sure.
That can mm-hmm. shed light on how this might look?
Yeah, so let me just explain what we think what the root problems are that we're addressing. So basically right now people don't have a place to sleep. It's illegal for them to sleep anywhere. They don't have places to go to the bathroom, and they don't have places to have their trash collected. And, you know, we're all suffering from this. But it's not that people don't want to do those things. It's that literally they're not given an opportunity. So what we've developed is a proposal that addresses those things. We have a peer-run safe sleep encampment proposal with green space where unhoused neighbors can stay, as well as tend a nearby garden that housed and unhoused community members can enjoy together. We have a peer-run safe car camping program where those with cars can safely park to avoid getting ticketed and impounded and losing the last lockable home they have, and that would be run similarly to the other one. And a peer-run hygiene program which would have trauma-trained attendants who would be from the unhoused community who would help supervise a mobile shower, laundry, bathroom truck located at each of those sites, and then porta-potties around the area, and then also help businesses learn how to open up their bathrooms to people and to develop positive, constructive, respectful relationships with them. And all of this, then also a peer-run waste collection program where people can put out bins like we do every day, you know, where people get to choose what they want to throw out, not be obligated to throw things out and then lose things in the process. And all of this would be supported by a jobs development program training people in trauma-informed care and first aid and some other things like that. Mm-hmm. We think providing safe, dignified places to perform basic life-giving acts improves life for everybody in the community. Well-rested people are better adjusted, able to interact positively with others. They're better able to help and contribute to those around them. Adequate bathroom access and regular waste collection protect the whole community from waste-borne communicable diseases. And all of this reduces the need for police, mental health interventions, uses of hospital and medical services, which all would save us a huge amount of public expense. So we're really looking forward to working with the CIC and are optimistic that they'll want to have some truly community-type participation. I forgot to mention, I'm trying to stuff it all in here.
Yeah, no, we have a couple minutes, so.
Okay,
yeah.
So, all right, so the last part of our proposal is democratically elected governing board to oversee and improve the proposed programs over time. We think with this process, you get it's vital for ensuring you leverage the deep knowledge of all those affected by our crisis. And it helps us bring different perspectives, experience, and expertise together to build the best solutions. Checking in with our communities on what is working and how they're experiencing the programs we develop is vital both for building community buy-in and support for the projects, and also for building the best, most innovative, and appropriate solutions to our houseless crisis. The parts that we've brought together are from different cities that have been very successful. But when we bring them here together in Portland, we need to have a process where there's a feedback loop, where people will have a chance to innovate and adjust programs to what people really need. And that includes everyone, businesses, housed, unhoused, mm-hmm. The whole nine yards.
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
We have 1 minute. Definitely want to mention whether or not the proposed January 30 vote date is a public event.
That is a public event.
And yeah. What can people do leading up to that? And we've got just about a minute.
Don't forget our website.
Yeah, if people like, they can go to our website at ccdpdx.org, and there's a very easy petition form that sends a letter to council and to the mayor. Please sign it if you're interested in this. Please research more. And then additionally, if you'd like to be present on January 30th at the city council member meeting to voice your opinion, that'd be great. I would love to hear from everybody.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I really appreciate you both coming in. Was a little bit short notice, so really appreciate it. But with the delay in the vote, we got you in here. Benjamin Donlan, Sandra Curtis Comstock, thank you so much. We'll post some links on our webpage once the show is posted so folks can get more information there.
Fantastic.
Right,
thank you so much.
Yeah.